Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. First segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Don Whittefield from Chris Adaptive Adventures. So tell me a little bit about the latest happening with Chris Adaptive Adventures.
I'm happy to report that we're getting into our busy summer season. We got approval through the Canada Summer Jobs program for 9 full-time students for 10 weeks duration. So half of them have started already, and we're going to have the second wave of students start in a couple weeks. So we will be providing more programming and options for people with disabilities in the Okanagan Valley this summer. So that's really exciting. We've also received some new funding through a variety of different sources and service clubs, local Kelowna Morningside Rotary Club that has provided with some financial support for some transfer lifts and some new equipment and things like that. So really grateful for all of that. So all in all, things are really positive, and our new staff program coordinator is doing an incredible job. So we're happy to have her on board, and she's hit the ground running here for the summer, for her first summer with us. So things are really flying. It's been great.
So have there been any challenges with all the new happenings?
I wouldn't say challenges. There's some new learnings for sure. We've just juggling more students than we've had in the past years is a bit of a challenge, but luckily with all of the students that we have, they're very mature and knowledgeable about the program already, as most of them have been either practicum students, past summer students, or volunteers with us. So we have a really strong team this year. So they've been able to sort of go on the fly with us, and that has sort of reduced the challenge of juggling so many staff. But I mean, all in all, it's there haven't been a whole lot of challenges. Just kind of the regular day to day stuff that pops up. But as I say, last time we spoke, we definitely walk the talk and adapt.
So, what type of disabilities does Chris typically work with?
We are proud to say that we don't actually say no to anyone and any kind of impairment. So we. But a lot of our participants have some sort of physical impairment, but there are cognitive, developmental disabilities, emotional, and physical disabilities that we work with. So it runs the whole gamut of impairments, and we see everything from developmental disabilities and autism to Asperger's to emotional challenges like depression and anxiety and that sort of thing, as well as people who have amputations or quadriplegia, paraplegia, brain injuries. We have a couple group homes here in town that are very, very much involved with our programs, and they're residential care homes that provide services for people living with brain injury. And so they actually have a weekly standing trip with us, two trips actually, one in the morning, one in the afternoon on Fridays, and they come out every week, so it's always lovely to have those people out. But yeah, the impairments, there's no limit to what kind of people we are happy to have out.
So what sorts of modified equipment do you generally use for someone on the more severe side of impairments?
On the more severe, it depends on what activity. So the three activities we're doing right now are hiking, cycling, and kayaking. And we use, so today, for example, we're going kayaking right away. We have modified our tandem kayak so that we've cut out the cockpit so that it's easy to transfer someone, for example, from a chair into the cockpit without having to have them slide down and into the cockpit like a closed regular sort of kayak. So we've modified that. We've also put a seat insert in. So the seat insert has the options to attach headrests, lateral supports, high and low on the person's body. We're also using carbon fiber forms, and they're sort of custom adaptations that we've made, the carbon fiber forms that are padded up and have a cover on them that we can put into the kayak, for example, to give someone a little bit of extra core support. So we use lateral support boards that we've basically we've built out of a plywood with foam glued onto the outside, so we can make them the shape that we need. And we also have slits in them so that they can fit our trail riders, for example, for our hiking chairs. We use a lot of foam, a lot of blow up airbags actually in the kayaks to make sure that people's legs are comfortable, and we can really pack someone in there so there isn't that worry of having them slide down into the cockpit, because we can't tie them to the boat for safety reasons, but we use a lot of airbags, for example, in that sense. We use a lot of soft straps to make sure that people's legs stay in alignment and that kind of stuff, so we're not, having someone with, sore hips after a kayak, that kind of thing. We use a lot of modified, in our cycling program, we use modified pedals. We use static pegs for people that can't pedal but want to go on to a tandem recumbent bike to experience the joy of going for a bike ride, but maybe not being able to actually contribute to the propulsion of the bike. So we're the variations and adaptations that we have are varied and wide.
So in your time with Chris, what's been the greatest success moment you've witnessed?
Oh, that's a great question. Honestly, I see little successes every single day. It's incredible to watch people light up and change through one of our adventures. I can't put a level of greatness to each of them because they are all so great to those individuals. There have been many moments that, and I get shivers just thinking about all of the moments, but there have been a few times when we've taken people out hiking, for example, that they've never been in the forest or on a hiking trail. And for them, and, with this one situation, this young 16-year-old girl with spinal muscular atrophy was hiking in the woods, and I asked her, and she was from Oregon, actually, and she... I asked her if she had trees like that in Oregon, and she basically said she didn't know because she'd never been in the forest. And her dad and her mom were along with that on that hike, and they, everybody was crying, and it was a very emotional time for everybody. But to see those firsts where people are experiencing kayaking or hiking or cycling or snowshoeing and skiing in the winter is pretty incredible to see.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Now, folks, bit of a location piece featuring a young woman with a learning disability sharing her insights about going through the education system.
So, tell me a little bit about your learning disability.
So, I have a non-verbal learning disability, so I can't read social cues or interpret sarcasm, and I also can't copy things off of the board at school.
And what sorts of supports have you received from the education system?
I'm able to use a computer for most of my assignments. I get extra time to write my tests. I don't have to eat in the cafeteria.
Oh, that's a blessing for us all.
Yeah.
I've had cafeteria food. Have there been any particular challenges in getting these accommodations established for you?
Yes, in grade 7, the school board didn't want me to get these accommodations, saying I didn't need them. But my mom pushed and pushed, and I was able to get them.
So, are your classmates supportive of you in your work?
Most of the time. Sometimes they all need me.
So, in your time in the education system, what's been the greatest success that you've achieved?
The greatest success has been being able to make friends who understand my disability and being able to have fun like any other teen.
So what are the next steps in your education?
Going to university for disability studies.
Oh, excellent program. So if you could send any one message to the community about the need for greater inclusion and acceptance, what would you say?
Don't exclude a kid just because they don't understand what's happening. Give them the support that they need so that they can succeed.
So if you could see one thing added to the school system today, what would it be?
More support rooms. We don't have a lot of them, and when they're full, the kids who didn't get in the room in time don't have the support they need.
So since you do some volunteer work here at the church, do you find it helps the kids to understand disability life a little better, having you as a support person?
Yes, I do.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this.
Caitlin volunteers as a Sunday school teacher at a local church. Now, for these kids, being around someone with a disability can help them as they grow up, in so much as these kids are just seeing this as normal. They're seeing a person with a disability as a strong, capable, functional member of the community. And that really is an important message that she's sending through her work. But the fact that she wants to go on and teach others about disability life, learn more about it herself, really speaks well. Speaks to the fact that individuals with disabilities don't need to be overcompensated for. What they do need is to be understood, heard, and valued as members of the community. Caitlin and Chris Adaptive Adventures are both doing that. They're creating something for the disability community, whether it be opportunities for recreation or just better awareness. Both of the initial guests for today really shared stories that are a great gift. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned. Because of the recent success of the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation Gutsy Walk, Joanna Zine has taken it upon herself to organize another great event.
We have a bikini fashion show to celebrate Canada Day coming up at Arius Nightclub inside of Caesars Windsor on July 1st at 10 p.m. We're asking for a minimum donation of $10 at the door.
How do people go about getting more information?
Contact me by phone at 226-348-6800, or you can apply to be a model by email at joanaszeen@gmail.com. So we'd love to see you all there.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Dawn Whittefield from Chris Adaptive Adventures, and Caitlin Court shared her story. Story of a young woman with a learning disability going through the education system. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Stephanie Craig. So what can you tell me about the recent Turner's Conference?
Well, our recent conference was held in early May in Ottawa. And what we like to do with our conferences is usually each year we alternate our conference locations between somewhere on the eastern part of Canada and somewhere in the western part of Canada to try to give our wide range of members a chance to go to a conference at least every other year. So this year it was in Ottawa, and our focus this year was on health, not only physical health, but mental health as well. So we had some very interesting seminars on heart health, on nutrition and exercise, as well as on more areas surrounding psychological health, such as internet bullying, relationships, and those areas.
So How did this compare to other conferences you've been to?
It was a very, very successful conference, I felt. We had over 100 members attend, and everyone seemed to have a wonderful time. We got great feedback from all of our seminars. And also at every conference on Saturday evening, we do a more formal banquet dinner with silent auctions. We have entertainment. And that was very successful this year as well. We kind of did it in a Hollywood red carpet theme, and everyone really seemed to enjoy that.
So what would you say the public responded to the best about the conference?
I think not only the information that they gained from the seminars, but the chance to socialize and network with other individuals and families who have Turner syndrome. Because Turner syndrome is fairly rare, on average only approximately one in every 2,500 women is diagnosed with it. A lot of times, especially for families who live in smaller areas, they don't really get the chance to meet anyone else who has Turner syndrome in their local area. So this is a chance for them to make connections and friendships with other individuals who are going through something similar to them and really get the chance to speak to them about their experiences and connect through that. So that's definitely been one of the positives. Another positive is that we do have children and teen programs for young and adolescent girls who have been diagnosed with Turner syndrome, and that gives them the chance to, you know, make friendships, socialize, but also help them with preparing for the future, kind of knowing what to expect. We had a seminar for our teen girls on learning how to advocate for themselves as they're progressing from a pediatric medical specialist to adult medical specialist, and helping them prepare for that.
So, in your experience at the conference, what was the greatest success moment you witnessed?
There's been so many. It's just wonderful to see people, you know, who have been attending their first conference and meeting others with Turner syndrome for the first time, and, you know, seeing that connection they make and that spark of joy in them when they realize that they're not alone in their experiences and that now they have this whole group of people that they can connect to and talk to. That's always really fantastic. And also family members who have just, you know, received a new diagnosis of Turner syndrome for their child, and you know, at first they're a bit scared and intimidated. They don't know what to expect. But then meeting others at the conference, they realize, you know, this isn't, you know, this most likely isn't going to be as bad as we thought it was going to be. You know, it's not the worst case scenario. They see all these successful women who have Turner syndrome, who have gone on to successful careers, you know, success in education. And for them, it's a chance to see that their child can have the full potential in life that they've envisioned for them.
That's the thing, though. When you believe you're facing a condition alone, it becomes a lot worse. When you dispel those myths, you're giving somebody, perhaps for the first time, the understanding that there are people who can relate to these issues and you can draw strength from that.
Oh, exactly. And that's one of the things that the society really tries to do is, you know, forge those social connections among the membership, and through not only, you know, information days in the conference, but we have chapters and groups located throughout Canada where we try and forge those connections throughout the year.
So if you could send any one message to the community about the need for increased awareness, what would you say?
I'd say that we are making great strides within not only the general community, but the medical community. And we're also really trying to connect through social network also. So, you know, just look for those connections. If you're a family who's been newly diagnosed, or even if you're an individual who was diagnosed years ago but is in a smaller community and, you know, feels a bit on the outside without knowing anyone else who has Turner syndrome, I would say, you know, look for those connections, find groups online. There are a ton of Facebook groups The Turner Syndrome Society of Canada has a Facebook group. There are other Facebook groups for individuals with Turner Syndrome where you can connect. You know, do that. Contact the Turner Syndrome Society of Canada. See if they can put you in connection with other individuals who live close to your area who have Turner Syndrome so you can, you know, forge those social connections, help you get through, you know, a lot of the, you know, more minute day-to-day, you know, experiences and frustrations that you may have that you just want someone to casually chat with.
So, what are the next steps for the society?
Well, we're looking at increasing our impact in social media. That's definitely something we want to build on since social media is such a huge influence in everyone's lives. We are also looking at, you know, increasing our contact and connections within the medical community, really ensuring that the medical doctors who would most commonly see individuals with Turner Syndrome, such as heart specialists, endocrinologists, have the information that they need to properly work with women with Turner Syndrome. We also, within the last year, have started doing an annual walk to raise awareness for Turner Syndrome in areas across Canada. So we're preparing for our second annual walk this fall in September at various locations, such as Toronto, Ottawa, Vancouver, and Windsor. And so we would love to see the communities who live close to those areas come out and support the walks.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this.
Hey, thank you very much, Cam.
Of course. I always love it when Steph shares her story. Fact is, in terms of disability life, she's one of those people who goes very much above and beyond. From her service on the Accessibility Committee at the university, to helping put together Accessibility Awareness Day, to her work with the Turner Syndrome Society, she has made disability just a part of her life. Her condition, Turner Syndrome, should not limit her or anyone else from experiencing the fullness and the richness of life. And that's what conferences like that one she described are all about. Just providing awareness. Saying to the world, there is in fact strength in numbers. Fact of the matter is, once a person realizes there are helps and supports out there, they're never facing their condition with the perception of being alone again. Because that's the worst thing any person with a disability can do to themselves. Just face it alone, shoulder more than they have to. There is absolutely no shame in asking for help and asking for support. But, as the theory in early childhood ed goes, it's a matter of scaffolding. Providing the help and the support that a person needs, but not going overboard. Allowing a person with a disability to try to succeed or to fail, just as anyone else in society would. You can't live someone's life for them, but you can certainly be a positive influence. You can certainly be that someone who says, I believe in the potential of the human spirit. I believe that for every condition out there, there's someone who's beaten it. There's someone who has come to the realization that they're stronger than any limitations society would impose on them. Bringing people together, sharing ideas, sharing insights, sharing solutions is what it's all about. Because a person affected with Turner Syndrome, for example, might not be aware of everything that can be done. You don't necessarily know all the answers. But if you talk to people, you can compare notes. You can say, this worked for me, it might work for you. This didn't work. It might work for you, but you might want to go in and just be a little more cautious about it. Sharing solutions, sharing ideas. That is how progress is made. And that is how we as a society move forward. Earlier in the show, when we heard Caitlin's story about how the education system didn't want to give her the right supports. My opinion is just ridiculous. It's not an unfair advantage to give a person with a disability equal opportunity, equal access, to have what they need for a level playing field. And taking steps towards getting the right supports, asking for help, pushing for that help, there's nothing wrong with that. If you can't find an answer through one group or one person, extend your reach a little farther. Keep digging until you find an answer. Nothing is hopeless unless we make it so, folks. And the perception of facing a condition or any sort of situation alone is the root of hopelessness. And I say to you, we should stem that. But the truth is, conferences, opportunities for athletic advancement, supports in the education system, all of them represent potential for a full life, providing a person with a disability that all-important understanding that says your life doesn't have to be limited or a shell of what you want to do. It can be full. You can get a full education. You can be a part of an athletic team. You can be stronger than your condition. Yes, you can even share your insights, share your wisdom, learn and grow along similarly affected people. Maybe in so doing, you'll change the course of things. If you change the perception of one person seeing the world as a hopeless place, if you show them for the first time that things can be done, things can be adapted, that the world can outgrow its infancy in terms of the preconceived notions, then that person's whole life can change in a moment. And you will never see the full effect of that. Going from a hopeless place to a place where they believe things are possible. Who knows who else might be affected? But never underestimate the strength of a person with a disability or the impact that can be had just by saying, you can do this. When Caitlin mentioned that her mother had pushed the education system to give her better opportunities, it's exactly what you should do, because the young people of today are the leaders of tomorrow. And if they fully understand and embrace disability life, then the world can continue to grow and be shaped. Every politician, all of them, without exception, they all like to talk about how they embrace diversity, how they want to make things more inclusive. One point or another, I'd imagine every politician has done this in a public way, just to make themselves look good. But the leaders of tomorrow should be those who truly embrace this notion. The ones who truly have an understanding that it goes beyond a public face. It is a matter of people's everyday lives. It's a matter of what you're building into them, what you're investing in their lives. In education, it's a matter of investing time and resources to create a well-informed, well-balanced person. For athletics, it's a matter of investing equipment and training to create strength, physical, mental, what have you. By bringing people together, that's an investment in equality. Sharing time, energy, resources, just to create an understanding. And all of these are worthwhile investments, because you're building in a sense of equality for a person with a disability. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. You've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.